got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, we welcome you back. Again, I remind you, the Bud Light Party, I speak on behalf of them. People say the country's divided, we disagree on everything. I don't believe that's true. We agree on a lot. Like puppy videos, everybody loves puppy videos. We all love three-day weekends. We like free parking, or anything free. Margaritas, Messi, Cristiano. You know what else everybody loves? Beer. Nothing brings America together like Bud Light. Raise one right now and join the Bud Light Party and myself every Wednesday night for the best in soccer talk. Now, right now, I've got a Houston Open Air Festival pass for Sunday. This is an all-day event, so there's tons of bands, tons of stages. Headliners, I think, is the Deftones is one of the bands. I think Anthrax is there on Sunday as well. So it's heavy hitting out there at Energy Stadium. Houston Open Air pass right now to Sunday. So this is a bunch of bands you can see. I got a single pass right now for the sixth caller at 713-780-3776. All right, with that, let's go to our guest now. We appreciate her coming on the show. High-flying striker for the Houston Dash. She played at the University of North Carolina. Kalia Ohai joins us now. Kalia. Kalia, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you now. Thank you very much for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
All right, so we're going to knock out a lot of good stuff tonight. I want to talk to you just about your season, first of all. Let's go individually first, then we'll talk a little bit more about the Dash. You guys finish up your season on Sunday, final game of the year. You can get tickets to see Kalia and the Houston Dash at HoustonDynamo.com. That's where you get your tickets. Sunday is the final game. First 10 games, you don't score any goals. Now you go on this torrid pace, scoring 10 and 9 games. What changed?
Yeah, I think I just really focused over the break that we had just on producing for the team. And I was telling someone the other day, it's a lot like when you get into a rut where you can't score, and like psychologically it's so frustrating as a striker. But I think the same thing happens once you get your first goal, and it kind of just starts getting the ball rolling, and that's what happened for me. I think I just needed to get one, and we had trouble scoring at the beginning of the season, but once I got that first one, it made everything a lot easier.
Yeah, you know, that when we talk about strikers, that's always cliche, but it's so true, isn't it? You get the first one, and then the next one comes.
Yeah, exactly. It's really difficult mentally to be a striker because you really have one job, and that's to either score or assist. And so when you're not doing that, even if you're playing well, you don't feel good about your performance because that's your job. And so I think it's really difficult when you just can't score. No matter what you do, you're just not really happy with it. And so, yeah, I think for me, just getting that first one, it was really good for me mentally.
She's exciting to watch too, Kalia Ohai. So if you have an opportunity, get down to the final game at BBVA Compass Stadium this Sunday. Was there anything that your coach Randy Waldrum did, either with the system, with defining your role differently? Was there anything else that changed, you know, when you went on this goal-scoring streak outside just individually, your confidence?
Yeah, I think I kind of shifted more to the outside, which is, it's funny because I was a little bit further away from goal. But I started playing wider, and it just gave me more space. And I think that's more my natural position is wider. And so I think that helped a bit. And then I also think as a team, we went through a 6-game streak where we just couldn't score goals. And I think just for everyone, that was really tough. So as a team, it was the same. Once we got that goal, we started scoring a bunch of goals. And also, when we got our Olympic players back, it made it a lot easier. I mean, playing with Morgan and Andy and Carly Lloyd in the midfield, it's so much easier as a striker.
Yeah, how difficult is it in an Olympic year like this with Carly going in and out of town, Morgan Bryan in and out, Alicia, you know, the Canadians as well, and some of your other internationals?
Yeah, it's really tough, especially we have three of them that play center midfield, and that's one of the most important positions on the field, and especially with gelling with your teammates and getting to know your tendencies and things like that. So I think that was really difficult, missing them. Also missing Lydia, who's our keeper, who's an incredible keeper. So, yeah, it is difficult. And I think in these past 2 years, the teams that do the best are the ones that can figure it out when their Olympic players are gone. Because once they get back, it's too late to start then. You have to keep winning when they're gone. And so that was difficult for us. But we're excited for next year that we will actually have them for a full year and get to train together and see what we can put out on the field.
Yeah, that's got to be something to look forward to. Carly Lloyd and Morgan in and out this year does make it difficult. But on the other hand, Alicia Chapman and Janine Becky get a bronze. I mean, welcoming them back must have been pretty interesting and exciting for you guys as a group.
Yeah, it was awesome. We were so happy and proud of all of the girls that played in the Olympics. And it's crazy just talking to them when they got back. It's so mentally difficult to go and play in that tournament and compete and then come right back and turn around and have to get right back into season. And also for Carly and Mo right now, who are still traveling with the U.S. playing friendlies and being in and out, it really is so taxing on them physically, obviously, but more so mentally. And I really do feel for them because they're expected to just come back in, train hard, play. And so, I mean, that's tough. And I talked to Janine a lot, and she just said going through the ups and downs and winning all those games and then losing and then winning bronze, it's a lot. And so we're so proud of them. And I really do believe we have the best international players out of any team in the league. So we're really lucky to have them back. And it was really fun watching them during the Olympics.
Kalia Ojai joining us here, 10 goals in 9 games. She's got one more opportunity on Sunday to bang a few more in their final game. The Houston Dash will be in action at BBVA Compass Stadium following the Dynamo on Saturday. Allie Long obviously makes a late start into the U.S. national team, a lot of it based on her league play. I'm sure you've watched what she's done because I know you have huge desires to be a part of the national team. You're always in the discussions for it. Speak a little bit to Allie Long and then your desire to get on that national team.
Yeah, Allie went to UNC, and so I don't know her personally very well, but I talked to Anson a lot about her, and he always says that she would call him up all the time asking him, how can she get in with the team? She still wants to be in with the team. She's training. How can she do it? And he would always tell her, you have to score goals. That's like the number one way to get, as an attacking player, to get invited in. And so he always tells me she just focused that, I think it was last season, on just scoring goals. And I think she had like 8 or 9 goals that season as a midfielder, which is incredible. And so I think that's when she got her first call in, was when she started scoring those goals. So for me, I mean, Anson gave me the same advice and just said, you have to produce to get called in. And so that's what I've really focused on. And yeah, I'm excited for the future. I'm hoping that I get the call in for one of the camps coming up. And yeah, it would be really exciting.
Well, it would be hard for me not to think that you're going to get called in after what a wonderful last 10 games and a hot goal scorer that you are. Kalia, thank you very much for joining the program tonight. We'll have to have you on again real soon.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Kalia Ojai, scoring goals, and you can catch her act Sunday and the rest of the Houston Dash down at BBVA Compass Stadium. Right now, I do have tickets for the Houston Dynamo. 6 caller right now gets a pair of tickets to the Dynamo Portland, defending MLS Cup champions, coming to town on Saturday. We're meeting with the high school coaches before that game, Bill McDonald, Rachel Kwan, a bunch of us before that game to talk up the NCAA College Cup. But Dynamo Portland Timbers, I said 6 caller right now at 713-780-3776 gets a pair. We thank you, Kalia Ojai, for coming on the show tonight. And coming up, we got, I think we got Tally Hall, either Tally Hall or Warren Barton next. I think Warren Barton is going to be up next talking Premier League. Then it'll be Tally Hall. So we got a couple of great interviews. We'll take a break. Best in Soccer Talk, ESPN 97.5 at Soccer Matters.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool. All
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, we roll on here. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. A moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Just remember, John Daspit and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. Go to DaspitLaw.com. Whether your accident is car, boat, motorcycle, construction, it might be a refinery if you work in one of the refineries, 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm is going to assure you they'll treat your case as if it's their own. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT, 713-322-4878. The Daspit Law Firm will work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. Perfect segue into one of the great analysts in the United States here. Former player in the Premier League with Newcastle. You see him on Fox Sports regularly. He is Warren Barton. Warren, thank you for coming on.
Always a pleasure, my friend. No problem.
All right. I saw something really cool. You went back to Newcastle where you played in the Premier League. You were back there working with youth players. I think what it said in the picture was it had been 10 years since you were back to Geordieland. What was that like? Did it pull at your heartstrings a little bit being back at St. James and around that environment?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I spent nearly 8 great years up there and had a wonderful time and, you know, not only playing for the club, but being captain of the club as well. And the time and the success we had, although we didn't win a major trophy, we was very competitive at the top end of the EPL, playing in the Champions League, playing in Europe every season. It's a special place. And I've been over in the States now 8 years, but I've not really been back behind the scenes for nearly 10 years. So I went back in the summer in June and July. I took my youngest son, who's a U12, over to the UK with his team, and we went off to London. And we'd done a bit of work behind the scenes in academies in London, and whether it was in Wolves, went up to Newcastle, obviously, Glasgow Rangers in Italy, Chievo. So we had a wonderful time in Newcastle. It's good to catch up with a lot of people. And obviously there was a big buzz at that time going into July and the start of the season with Rafa Benitez. So it's a special place. It's very much, I always adding it to Pittsburgh Steelers, where people work hard Monday to Friday, and at the weekend they want you to entertain them and be successful. So it's very much an industrial place. People work hard, as I said, Monday to Friday, and they expect their teams to do well and work hard and entertain them.
You know, I had the good fortune of spending some time over there, and I think I mentioned this to you on prior interviews. I stayed with an FA coach named Stan Nixon. I do believe he was a scout for Newcastle at one point. But I do remember it was a working class place. At the time I was there, there weren't a lot of jobs. It was pretty tough. But I can see how the people would use, like we do here in the United States, Newcastle United as an escape from the daily rigors of jobs, pressures, family. It's kind of a release, right? So they expect you to work as hard as they do every week.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, if you're born in Newcastle, you've got no choice. You know, further up the country where London is very cosmopolitan, but, you know, you're going up to Newcastle, Sunderland, and even Middlesbrough to an extent. But Newcastle is the biggest city in the northeast, and it's close to the border of Scotland. And then you go to Glasgow, and you've got Celtic and Rangers. And the people are. It's a mining town. They're hardworking people. As I said, they have no choice. When you're born, you get given a black and white shirt, and you support the team. It's like a cult over there. They follow them. The fans go everywhere. Regardless of what they have in their bank, they're going to save their money up and go and watch the team home and away. You know, you see it the other day, 5,000-6,000 people going to watch Newcastle play. But it's a special place. It can suffocate people. I've had players like John Dale Thomason that's won the Champions League medal with AC Milan, and he found it very difficult up there. When you walk into a supermarket or a shopping mall, people want your attention. They want to know what's going on. They want a bit of your time. And I think, Glenn, I've spoken before that I've been out in a restaurant and had 15 Geordies sitting next to me at the end of the night having a drink and eating my food. So that's what it is. But you either, take to that and enjoy it and go with it and be proud of representing the people, or it can suffocate you like it has done with one or two people. But it's a unique place.
And so I would assume that when Newcastle picks players, you know, they kind of take that into account, how they could adapt locally to what are some of the expectations of the local fans, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big part of the community. So Bobby Robson, who was my favourite manager at the time when we was out there, he would make sure that we knew about the fans. You know, if there was a kid outside the gate who wanted an autograph, he would be the first one to do it. If we was leaving an away ground, whether it's Anfield or Old Trafford, and there was a supporter by the bus, he would make sure that we signed the autograph and made sure he was okay. So it's very much a being part of the team, the community as one, and going forward. And as I said, you either embrace it and enjoy it, which I did, or you know, you can find it a little bit intimidating, but it's a unique place. It's a special place, like you said, Glenn. When you go there, the football, the noise, the passion, the atmosphere, the intensity that it has, it's second to none, in my opinion.
He's Warren Barton, Fox analyst, former defender with Newcastle, joining us here. DeAndre Yedlin, how do you think he's adapted so far? And, you know, what would you give him as words of advice if you had an opportunity to talk to him before he went, if, in fact, you might have anyway?
Yeah, no, I did. I via Twitter and that, I sent him best wishes and enjoy it. And he's got every attribute for the fans to love him. You know, he's very energetic the way he plays. He's very passionate the way he plays. He's quality when he gets on the ball. He plays with a high intensity, which they like. And they like their players to enjoy their football. And I think he does that. You know, he's already had a taste, and I'll be careful here, but in the smaller part of Sunderland. So he's had a smaller taste there of what it was like at Sunderland. But Newcastle's a different level. And the fans will really take it in because, as I said, he's a pacey player. You know, he's one of them players that is energetic. He can get forward. He can make things happen. He plays with a smile on his face, and I think that's important. And I've just wished him good luck and enjoy it. I said, enjoy the moment. And he looks like he's doing that at the time. He's going to learn off of Rafa Benitez. He's always been a question mark. Even when he was at Seattle and in the national team, what's he defended like? And I think he learned a lot after Sam Allardyce, and he'll learn even more off of Rafa Benitez. But I think he's hit the ground running. He's obviously got a goal, which is nice for any defender to score a goal. And then he can go forward. But I think he's tailor-made for that club and that league. And then being well, they get promotion back into the promised land, and he'll be an established Premier League player. I like the kid. I think he's got a lot of attributes to go forward. And what I like about it is his personality and his enthusiasm for the game. And I think he chose that when he plays.
Warren, let's switch gears here to Manchester United. Obviously, they've lost three matches in a row. I'm going to take you right to the United midfield because, obviously, that has to be functional in order to get results, and how Paul Pogba's being utilized. Your thoughts on the United midfield and Pogba?
It's quite concerning when you think that, you know, the money that's probably been spent on him, and that's not his problem. That's not. Let me first and foremost, I was a record for a defender, and you can't do a lot about what people pay for you, so that's just a compliment that he has to deal with. But on Fox, we did the Feyenoord game, and it was a very quick, energetic game. It was a high-tempo game, and he was getting frustrated because he wasn't allowed to do what he wants to do, and that's how the EPL is going to be. He's not at the best team in Italy where he can stroll around with the best players around him and have 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds on the ball. He should know that with his first time with Manchester United. I think what he needs to do is get angry with himself, and I think he needs to sense that I'm not going to be what everyone wants me to be. I'm going to be what I am. And I'm going to be a box-to-box player. I want him to be like a Steven Gerrard or a Patrick Vieira, where he takes the game by the scruff of the neck, whether it's defensive or offensive, and he's going to run the show. I don't expect him to pass the ball like Pirlo. I don't expect him to score goals like Paul Scholes. I expect him to be Paul Pogba, where he can dominate a game with his physical presence. He looked a different player when Zlatan Ibrahimovic was there. I think that gives him a lift when he plays, and I think he needs that at the moment because he's finding the pressure and the spotlight on him very, very difficult, as much as he likes it and the different hairstyles. But people will judge you what you do on the field. And at the moment, he hasn't got that right balance. Now, whether that's Michael Carrick next to him, I'm not sure whether long-term Fellaini's the ideal person to play around him, because I don't think he gives him the ball when he needs it. Fellaini's not a player that can pass the ball 15, 30 yards into someone's feet, maybe into the forward, knowing that Popper's going to push on from there. So I think they need to get that balance, and maybe it is a Carrick at the moment who's got that calming influence to tell him where he needs to go. But I mean, they've got great weapons. I mean, Martial is a player that I like. You've got Rashford on the right-hand side, and Rooney, and then obviously Zlatan up front. That would be my thing, but I think they need a more secure player next to him and more calming influence. And as I said to him, get angry. Get angry with what's happening. Take it personal and go out there and show everybody what a player you are. Not that you're worth $100, $120 million, but show people that you're one of the best midfield players in the world.
And wasn't that how he had success at Juventus? He always had people behind him.
Yeah, exactly. Whenever he had it, he was never the number six, and he wasn't the number eight. He had a couple of people around him, where Marquisio, or whether it's in the times when you've had, obviously, Pirlo that would find him in the passes. He doesn't need to be restricted. I don't think you can restrict him, and that's what I found in the final game, that he was trying to be a number eight, and he was already getting marked. He's definitely not a 10 because he can't make things happen there. So I think he needs to be that in between the six and the seven, where he can influence the game how he sees fit. But I do believe, and I've played at that level, a Roy Keane next to him would tell him what to do. and tell him how to do it. And I think that's what they're missing at the moment. Michael Carrick's not Roy Keane because of the different type of players, but what Michael's got is a lot of experience and a lot of respect in the game, and I think that would help him out in this short-term period. Because I think, you know, don't get me wrong, Glenn, in November, December, we're going to say what a player he is. But I just think at the moment, he is finding it different and getting a bit frustrated with himself and the game.
Are you concerned about the Marcus Rashfords, the Anthony Martials, you know, this young crop that's just chomping at the bit to break into United under a manager like Jose Mourinho, who not necessarily has always, leaned on youth?
No, I think, you know, we made that point. You know, it's for Rashford, when he was England, was he going to stamp his authority? I think what's happening now with Rashford, he's forcing him to do it because his performances, and like if he plays well, like he did for the under-21, he got a hat-trick. He come on, he scores a goal again. I think the pressure will be there to play him. And Mourinho's not silly. Mourinho will play what he feels is going to be making the fans happy, because he's had that time with still that cloud, that uncertainty, what happened at Chelsea is still around him. I know he said about the players with Louis van Gaal, but I think he's under a little bit of a cloud as well, because what happened at Chelsea, I think that's still lingering in the back of his mind and his face after the three defeats, whether it's particularly the Manchester City games, because they got outplayed and outcoached for a good hour in the game. And I think he took that on board and needed to figure that out. So I think what he needs to do is play players at the moment that can relieve some pressure so the fans will be happy, and then obviously make it more of a high-tempo game, because that's what Man United have always been, a high-tempo game. They've never been a grinder go out 1-0 and see how it goes. They've been a team that have always gone forward, and that's what disappointed me, Glenn. I don't know whether you see the Feyenoord game, but they sat back and let Feyenoord dictated the game. That's never been United's way, never. Now, not so Alex Ferguson. I'm talking about way before that. United have always been a team that they've gone and played, and they sat back and had five in midfield and left Rashford up front, who was isolated, and he was desperate for support, but it wasn't coming. So I think Mourinho now has to take stock a little bit and really focus on what's best for the team, not what's best for his. As a coach, you have to evolve. And I don't think he's evolved a lot in the last 8 years.
I think
he needs to do that.
That's my next question. Can he coach a team that imposes a style on an opponent?
I think he can. I think, but as any coach, and you know you've been in the game long enough, when things are going wrong, you go back to what you're secure with and what you know, and that is defensive and sitting back. What I love about Pep Guardiola, that he asks so many questions of the opponents offensively. How can I hurt this team? How can I keep the ball in their half? And that's why the fullback's tucking in. So when they win the ball, the fullbacks, they're not a flat back four. You're actually like a two and a two. You're winning it higher up the field. So you're not allowing the opponents to get anywhere near you. I think Mourinho has to figure out, and he hasn't really changed his staff around a lot, but you know he needs to figure out quickly how he can impose the quality that he has on the opponents. Now, Rooney and Zlatan are never going to run you behind you. But I'll tell you what, the two wide players will do. I remember playing against Andy Cole and Dwight York, who were the number two. Good players, but never really going to run behind you. But I'll tell you what Giggs did and Beckham did and Scholes. And that's what we then had to go back, create space for Andy Cole and Dwight York, and then the rest is history.
Well, listen, Warren, as always, we thank you very much. Hey, by the way, being a Newcastle guy, you know who Gordon Sumner is, right? So you must have been a big police fan, right? Were you a big police fan?
Yeah. I know all these Geordies. We all stick together, my friend.
You know, I once saw the police at Gateshead Stadium.
Very good. Yeah. We know Sting's a Geordie as well.
Yeah.
He doesn't sound like it. He's lost his accent, but he's a Geordie.
I think his father was a milkman or something in Newcastle.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. See, they come from small beginnings and end up being rock stars.
What a band they were. Well, Warren, listen, as always, great stuff. Thank you very much for coming on the show. We do appreciate your time always, and we'll talk to you soon.
No problem, my friend.
All right. One and only Warren Barton. Always great stuff for him around the Premier League. Love getting his thoughts on everything up in Newcastle. Hey, quick word for Liberty Kitchen. Now, you know I'm passionate about great food, and my friends at Liberty Kitchen know how to serve up lunch, supper, brunch better than most. By the way, we had them in studio last week, and Tyler Scott can account for the amazing food we had in here. Think of Liberty Kitchen as modern American comfort food, classics taken up several notches, farm stand crisp food that Liberty Kitchen stamps its claim on and owns. It's big flavor, served at a neighborhood social. It's Liberty Kitchen. They've got all the staples, the gumbo, the oysters on the half shell, the cowboy surfers, the po' boy. I'm getting hungry just thinking about this. The infamous burger bowl. It's all there. Signature cocktails, cold beer. Now you understand why Liberty Kitchen is a regular stop for me. My thanks to Lance Fegan and Chef Eric for coming in studio last week. All right, we'll take a break here. Remind you that Richmond Arms is one of Houston's premier soccer pubs, also the King's Head Pub. And they're both designed and built with soccer in mind for your superior watching entertainment. Come watch your favorite clubs this upcoming season. RichmondArmsOnline.com, the King's Head Pub, Houston.com. We break.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, soccer fans, tonight we wrap it up in big style. Tally Hall is going to join us here from Orlando, Florida. And as always, we're certainly happy to have Tally on the program. Tally, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Glenn, it is always a pleasure.
All right,
we love coming on your show.
I know. We're going to talk about a lot of things here as we wrap it up tonight. But, you know, I just want to, and I know this is right off the top, before we get into some of the soccer-related things, you've made a huge career choice here. And to go into the police force of Orlando from playing professional soccer is incredibly rare. And, you know, I drive around Houston and sometimes I'm at a red light and I look at a police officer and I say, wow, I wonder what his wife thought when he walked out the door this morning, knowing the dangers of his job. Here you are with a family. Tell me how you came about this decision, because this is a rarity.
You know, The more I've gotten into it, the more I kind of find that there are quite a number of athletes that have gotten into the police force. So it's not to me it doesn't seem like a crazy idea at all. I mean, for me it feels like something that you know, has been building up for a long time. Especially with everything that's going on in the world and in the U.S., the news, you know, it's kind of like I've been looking at what I do as a soccer player, and I've enjoyed what I've done, and I've gotten such a great life experience with it. But then I see what's going on in the world, and I think, you know what, I think there's something more important, more meaningful for me, and I have a calling to serve and have a positive impact in the community, and I think I can do both those things. You know, as a police officer. So I don't think it's crazy at all. I mean, I know it's a dangerous time to be a cop, but I don't think there's ever really been a safe time. But you know, it's something that I felt like I needed to do. It's a great opportunity for me to work with a good department and set some roots down. And as an athlete, people on the outside looking in don't understand that, you know, I've moved around a lot. To get back to the top, I probably was going to have to continue to move around and figure my life out to kind of find my opportunity again. And, you know, I just mentally, I wasn't willing to do that to myself and to my family. So for me, I'm thrilled about it.
Well, I don't think anybody who got to meet you in Orlando or here or throughout your life, couldn't recognize very quickly that you were a person that were concerned about other people, and you bring up the word serve. And, you know, I think every male in America at some point or another asks themselves the question somewhere at some point, you know, wow, what would it be like if I was, you know, in the Army or in the Armed Forces or a Marine or in the Navy or you know, and I was overseas in battle and you know, you know, I look at my father, 90 years old, who survived Okinawa. You know, how does that happen? So I don't think, you know, any male that's on the face of the earth probably has asked themselves that question. And that's why I think it's pretty amazing what you're doing. And I know you're kind of downplaying it and other athletes have done it. But, you know, you have a family. How did this decision come about? How much talking with your wife did you have to do?
Well, if I'm being totally honest, there were times in Houston, you know, those first 2 years I was there, that you know, I wasn't sure that I wanted to continue playing then, you know, it was one of those things that I had this calling to serve. Seriously looked at, not playing and joining the military, decided to stick with soccer. And I haven't, obviously I haven't regretted that decision. It's been a great career and a great ride, and my family's got to experience a lot of really good things. But at the same time, to say that I felt guilty about not joining the military is not the right phrase. But I felt like I had something to offer that was something more important than myself. And professional athletics, as much as you're in a team environment, as soon as you start getting a paycheck, you're constantly trying to get more playing time or a bigger piece of the pie, or you're just trying to stay in it. And there's a very much an individual aspect of it. I'm excited about not having that. The focus is helping the community. And if you're the best police officer in your unit, you get paid the same as everyone else. You're not doing it for money. You're doing it for all the right reasons. So, to not join the military and now 10 years of playing, looking at it, this is an opportunity for me to do that. I'm obviously too old to join the military. And even if I wasn't, I'm really looking forward to living in one spot, not traveling every other weekend, not missing kids' sports and activities. So I'm excited to kind of get those roots and do something besides, trying to get more spotlight. I mean, I've done a lot of interviews this week and none as special as this, by the way, Glenn. I'd like to point that out. I'm looking forward to just be a quiet, kind of professional, public servant. You know, I'm not looking for any attention. I just want to have a positive impact.
He's Tally Hall. He's joining us here, played for the Houston Dynamo, so many outstanding seasons here. Did the time, as he just mentioned, behind Pat Onstad and, got his break, and boy, he ran with it, two MLS Cups. And then I'm going to go to 2013, Tally, and that year, did the ball look like a beach ball to you? I mean, yeah. I went into calling games going, this guy's not going to be beat tonight. It doesn't matter what happens in front of him. He's not going to be beat.
Well, you know, it was one of those things that I just felt like the defenders and myself just kind of had a great understanding where, you know, we're working off each other. The attackers are being put in corners, and then when I was called upon, it's like, you know, it was always within range. And if it went past me, I had multiple defenders saving off the line. I mean, obviously, Kofi Sarkodie, I just saw a replay of it when I was watching an MLS game last weekend. I mean, so it just felt like it was one of those years where we were all just working together. One of those, like, we were, you know, the back four and I were just a unit of five, and it was a lot of fun because all the games were a fight. And, you know, obviously my time with the Dynamo, as much as we had success in the postseason, I mean, every game was a fight. It wasn't always celebrations at the end of it. We squeaked into the playoffs. You know, we had to wait till the last weekend or close to it. And so that's what I look back and remember. That 2013 year was definitely – yeah, it's like we just seemed to always kind of pull it out. And it was one of those years where at the end of the game, we were in the locker room kind of laughing at each other. Not because it just felt like we were like somehow we did it again, you know? And so it was a kind of a fun defensive year for all of us.
Tally, how do you sum up your time in Orlando? Because, you know, in fact, I think I did your first game back off injury against LA, right? The big win. I think it was about 50,000 people. Yeah, that was a great day. And that was you coming back from the injury. But sum up your time in Orlando. That was a wonderful day for you, Orlando. That day you beat the LA Galaxy convincingly. But, man, that crowd and that passion there was just something I'll never forget.
Yeah, it's, it's describing the teams I've played for and the experiences, it's like talking about your kids. I mean, each one is different and special, and you can't take any away from it. My time in Houston was just phenomenal, and then Orlando was something different. It was a different role for me, and the city and the passion that the fans have is amazing. It really is turning into a hotbed of support here for MLS soccer and US soccer. But what I'll remember is kind of a different role for me. It's the first time I got to put on a captain's armband as a professional soccer player, you know, when I think Kaká got red carded or something, and he walked up to me and put the armband on me. I mean, that's a special moment, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, taking on a new leadership role was probably something that you know, I'll sum up with it, that had the most impact on me. Obviously, being told throughout the year that, hey, we're going to continue your contract on, and then I get hurt, and then they don't pick up my option. And that was a difficult mental status or state for me. But if that didn't happen, then I wouldn't be where I am right now doing what I'm doing. And I'm being honest, I'm very excited about my career change. I think it's happening at the right time for me. I feel great. My body feels great. So I feel like I'm able to give this new career 100%.
So what happens? You just walk into the Orlando police and say, you know, I'm Tally Hall. I'd like to be a police officer. How do I go about it? Or is there a recruitment, or how does this work?
To be a cop, I don't think people realize until they try to apply how intense and exhausting the process is to be a police officer. I mean, I think I applied in January. And this is the earliest that I could get in to an academy. So, I mean, that's a long time to wait. And so I was fortunate. I had talked to the police officers that were involved of bench security last year in Orlando. And, you know, they kind of piqued my interest. They kind of started talking about what the lifestyle is as a cop. And I thought, you know, there's a lot more to being a cop than just writing speeding tickets. And you know, so it's like, it was something that kind of opened my eyes to there's a lot of ways you can make a difference and have a positive effect. So I you know, they had said, hey, when I got cut from Orlando, they're like, hey, you can keep the job in Orlando. Like, come on, there's a we are hiring type of thing. And I don't think they realized how serious I was when I said, yeah, I'll do it. And so, yeah, I had to go through the application process just like everyone else. You know, it's an online application. Then you have to get approved for the first round. Then you got to take a written test and then a physical test and then, you know, a psych, and you got to do an interview and then a panel interview and then a chief's interview, another, polygraph. I mean, there are so many hurdles to, you know, get over and get through that, you know, I have definitely a new appreciation for all cops and when it comes to how hard it was for them to get a job, because I know how hard it was for me to get this. I mean, it was not easy.
Does the climate now with police officers and how edgy it is right now, does that concern you?
Well, I do kind of look at it as, listen, I haven't been in a life or death situation. I never have. And I'm going into something where there's likelihood that I will be facing something where things get very serious and that can happen very quickly. But I will say that I am used to, when it comes to national media, obviously body cameras and people filming, I don't have a problem, being accountable for my actions. I think for the last 10 years as a professional athlete, I mean, all your actions are being judged and analyzed, and you know, every teammate has their opinion, every coach has his opinion, every analyst has their opinion, and certainly every fan has their opinion. And so you have to act with everyone kind of having a magnifying glass over you. So I don't want to say that I know, you know, how I'm going to act and blah blah blah, but I will say that I'm comfortable with the idea of having my, you know, accountability for my actions. That's what I'm used to with soccer. And as I become a police officer, I'm okay with my actions being analyzed. And, you know, if I ever get in a situation where people are watching a video and sitting there judging me, I'd have faith in myself that, everything I do, I'm gonna do to make a positive difference, and that's sometimes taking bad guys off the street, and sometimes that's lending out a helping hand whenever you can. So, you know, that accountability is something I'm used to, and really I am getting into this and to be a positive difference. I look at community relationships between police officers and citizens as a high priority, and, you know, good community relationships are something that I've been practicing building for a while now. So it's not going to directly translate, but mentally I'm ready to take on that role as well.
Talia, I don't think anybody could have put it better in words right there. You are an amazing candidate. I would liken you to that guy who does that commercial, who's the world's most interesting guy. You could be that guy now, I think. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
I am not. I don't think the world's most interesting guy tucks his kids in and then goes straight to his bed and tries to fall asleep as fast as possible. But I appreciate the compliment. I have drank Dos Equis before. So.
There you go. Well, you know, we're a Bud Light station here, so we'll just... Okay. But that's all right. See, that's good radio, because you just segued me into saying that we love Bud Light on this network for supporting the sport of soccer. Last thing before I let you go, and I think this is something I want to thank you for. I always have appreciated how you would talk to the media, win or lose. You did it responsibly. You did it with accountability. You did it honestly. And I think there's something that can be learned from you in the way you dealt with media, especially, you know, in certain markets where you're trying to ingrain the sport into the mainstream a little bit more. You took that part of the job very seriously.
Well, yeah, I've always kind of found it funny that there are definitely players who take offense, and maybe take offense is the wrong word, but get kind of frustrated if there's someone in the media or you know, someone whose voice is heard that criticizes them. And for me, I always thought if I'm in a spot that people are criticizing me, that's kind of the spot that I want to be in. I mean, no one's criticizing the guy on the bench, you know? So if you're getting criticized or people are talking about you, that is part of your job. And media, for the most part, for soccer players, has been good. I mean, I think everyone, not that everyone's working together to grow the sport, but at the same time, there's so many good stories that are involved with a growing league that those can kind of outweigh you know, the other negative stories. I mean, because if someone's playing bad right now in the league, there's going to be this young talent that comes through, and that's a better story than a guy that you already know that's not playing well. So as the sport grows, as Major League Soccer gets to be a beast of American sports, and I think it will be that, there's going to be more money and therefore more accountability on players. And guys are going to have to get used to that, and that's part of the job. So, yeah, I mean, I always said if we lost games, the goalkeeper has the best view in the house for explaining why that happened, and I felt like that was my job. There are guys that said, We're frustrated, and for me, I always try to keep an even keel. I guess that's the Tim Hanley. He never got me to do yoga, but he always impressed upon me that the need to be level headed in a loss, in a win, in a playoff game, in a regular season game. It never mattered. You needed to approach it the same. And, yeah, I definitely think there are guys that do that. But at the same time, I think it's important for players to be themselves. If they, you know, it's hard to say, like, keep an even head when there are guys that go off on huge rants and all of a sudden all the media wants to follow them. So, you know, I think guys, it's important that guys be themselves. But at the same time, it's your job. If you had a bad game, own up to it. People respect that and work your butt off to have a good game next time.
Tally, as always, thank you so much for coming on the show. I wish you the best of luck in your new career. You sound like the perfect candidate for it. You seem really, really content with where you are. And as always, we thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Glenn. And throughout the years, you've been a big, you know, a positive influence on me and helped me from the very beginning. I was talking about the days when, you know, 2009, 2010, you were there saying, hey, Tally, I think you're gonna have a good career. Keep it up. So from day one, Glenn, I just want to say thank you for all your support, and it's been a it's been a wild ride. I just want to thank you. I want to thank the fans listening who have been part of it. I'll cherish that that aspect for the rest of my life. I mean, I look back on pictures that I have with my two oldest kids on BBVA on the field, you know, running around and the fans screaming and yelling at my kids and supporting them. And it's been amazing. And I just want to thank you and the fans for everything you've done for me and my family. So thank you.
Well, it couldn't have happened without you. Listen, thank you. And I promise if I'm ever in Orlando, I'll drive the speed limit.
I'll make sure of it.
You got it. Thank you. That's the one and only Tally Hall. Well, that's a special guy. Very, very interesting what he's doing career-wise. And there's never a person who had a bad thing to say about him. I mean, that guy shared his time, both on and off the field with the fans. He got it, both from the media perspective and from the playing perspective. That'll do it tonight for Tyler Scott, my producer. I thank him for everything he does each and every week. For you, the soccer fans, thanks for listening in. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Facebook, Soccer Matters. Keep supporting soccer on the radio. Until next Wednesday, good night.
ESPN 97.5.